Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Go to the website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on the Total Education Network, now syndicated on 80-plus stations. Go to the website, check it out. I also own a Berthier College Tutoring Consulting Company. We sometimes have a letdown, especially this time of year, even though it's because kids and parents out there really think they're going to be fine. They really believe that everything is going to be perfectly fine. They don't have to worry about tutoring anymore. You know, it's a new school year, a new situation. So a lot of times it's a little challenging for myself as a business owner and also wanting to help kids when they decide that they're not ready for that help. And I think that that's something that shout out to families all out there saying, you got to start from day one with help if they need it. Don't wait till October. Don't wait to November. And that's the public service announcement by the Total Tutor. But I want to welcome the program, Jared, my co-host. Jared, how are you?
Thanks, Neil. I'm doing quite well. And it's always good to hear you sharing that important advice to parents and listeners.
But don't you agree? I mean, a lot of times what we do is we, as parents, we just say, okay, you know, everything's good. New year, we're going to be good. We don't need any extra help anymore. And a lot of times that comes back to backfire on them.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. And certainly the school plays a role in that. You know, if a teacher spots trouble or thinks there's challenges that need to really be met, it's important to let the families know, the parents know right away. Don't wait until that first semester ends, 9 weeks into the school year. You know, you've got a third of the school year over by then. I mean, 9 weeks doesn't seem like that long, but it's, you know, 25% to 33% over at that point. That's a lot of lost time.
Exactly. And we go back to the valuing in education, which we talked about on the Total Education Hour last week. Everyone that's listening to the network every night is kind of seeing the process. But I guess I have a radio show to vent in certain ways when we always don't have the best day possible. I know tomorrow I'll wake up ready to roll, really excited about the big talk at Aquinas Academy on Saturday. So I look at it like, you know, some days we just have those days. And luckily I get to finish it off on the radio, on the stage that I at least can know that I am the king of education talk. So let's go right to our topic. And I stole the mic for six sessions. Now it's Jared's turn to kind of give us some education tips for a couple of weeks. But what's our topic today?
Well, you know, today, you know, our listeners and parents and people that have followed this show for several years know kind of the background of my son and his history and the illness that he has, the genetic disorder that he was born with, that we discovered at 18 months. And so today, you know, he has a surgical procedure coming up on Tuesday. You know, pretty delicate. There's some definite risk involved in it. And, you know, maybe a little bit of catharsis here on my end. But I wanted to kind of talk to our listeners about how do you tell a child that you love and that you care so much about, which all of us do as parents, how do you tell that child that they're sick? How do you tell them that, you know, what they have is pretty serious, and you know, it isn't a cold, it isn't a virus, it's something that is going to need time, perhaps surgery, maybe some pain, you know, and how do you address that with your child?
Well, I have gone through this, and my daughter Anastasia has gone through this when she had to get her tongue lanced about 6 months ago. And we remember correctly that we really didn't explain things completely. And I really look back to this, and I remember you kind of offering me some advice, or we talked about this on the network at one point in time, but not in quite detail, about how we really have to explain this. I think I had some medical people on before and specific things that you have to explain this process to your child. You have to tell them they're not feeling well so that they understand, so that they don't lose trust in you. And I think that's where you want to kind of bring the point. Go ahead.
And that is actually that is the key word that we are looking at here. So much of our show, the book that we're putting together, is about developing trust, developing that relationship with your child. And we know that takes time. For many parents, the bond that they have with their child is instantaneous, whether, you know, through birth or adoption. It takes time for the child to develop that. That child is not born, loving that parent unconditionally. You know, that comes through meeting their needs, developing trust, being there for them. And that's exactly the approach that we have taken with our son. And it's the approach that I've shared with families that I've met who have also dealt with sick children that I've advised them. So many times in my work, I've had families who have said, you know, how do we handle this? My husband thinks we should just keep it to a minimum, that we should simply say that they're sick, you know, they have a cold, they're going to go to sleep for a little bit, and then they'll come back and everything will be okay. You know, the first response that I have with that is I delicately will say to the family, you know, what happens when they wake up and they're not all better?
Yes.
You know, what are you going to say to your child then? Or what happens when they come out of the anesthesia and they are in a lot of pain, regardless of how much pain medication they have? You know, that child, even, you know, my son's six. He's been getting MRIs since he was 3 years of age, and all of this was to try and give him the best options available when the tough decision needed to be made. You know, for my wife and I, the tough decision was in several areas. One was, first and foremost, was that we were making a decision for our son that he had no control of. You know, he can't look at us and say, I don't want to do this. He can do that, but he doesn't get the final decision. You know, we're his guardians. We are the ones who have to make that decision. It's very difficult personally to do that, and our listeners may even hear that in my voice. To make that decision for another person is incredibly hard to do, even if they're 6 years old and you know that they don't have the capacity to make a decision in their own best interest. But it's a lot of responsibility to do, to take on, you know, especially something that has a significant element of risk to it. So I say that, you know, what I advise parents is, okay, you take the approach of minimizing this with your child. What do you do when they wake up?
Right.
You know, they counted on you to be honest with them. They counted on you to be trusting. And now they know they're not all better. And that's I firmly believe that children do, even at some very early ages, are very capable of recognizing that mom and dad were not honest with them. And the key word that you mentioned there, Neil, was trust. We do that through so many elements of our advice for parents, our teachings for parents. And this is one of the toughest ones that you're going to have to deal with as a parent. I hope there are not many parents that have to deal with this, but this is the kind of subject where you really are put to the fire as to what you're going to do with, you know, how you're going to handle those things with your child.
Exactly. And I think your advice is tremendous in that we have to explain things to our kids. We have to tell them there is something wrong with them and that they'll be better, but it's going to be a lot of pain when you wake up. It's not going to be this rose colored situation. You go to surgery, come back, I'm healthy, I'm ready to run around again. That doesn't always happen. It takes a little time to recover. Understanding that, you know, if you have this, it's going to be painful at times. It's going to be hard at times. If we have a child with autism, for them to understand that they're different, but that they're still exceptional and they're still special in some ways. All types of illnesses or disabilities, we can't just sugarcoat it and not tell our kids this, because once they figure this out for themselves, they're going to feel like they've been betrayed.
That is exactly right. And when you have a child who's dealing with a challenging illness, a difficult set of circumstances, I think the last thing you want them also facing is feeling betrayed. Because, you know, and then again, this is what I stress to parents, is that child is absolutely going to need you, and they need to be able to trust you. So with our son, and this has been very difficult because we have a team of surgeons who don't necessarily agree with the decision that we made as a family. They feel that it is too risky. They feel that it is not the right time. On the other hand, we have a team of surgeons that have said to us, this is absolutely the right time. This is the best procedure to do this. And for those listeners who may not know or who have just, you know, started listening to our show, we won't admonish them for only starting listening now after all these years. But, my son has a disorder called NF2, neurofibromatosis type 2. And, Neil, you're familiar with it. I've talked about it many
yes.
times on the show. This is a fairly devastating disease, and depending on the kind of the extreme or severe nature of it, it's life-threatening. He is, six, and he's already developing tumors on the cranial nerves, and so this is very delicate surgery. For what we were doing, the last 3 years we've been getting MRIs on his brain and on his spine with the idea that if tumors started to develop, we were going to do everything we could to get them early and to give him the best prognosis in life. I mean, in addition to just living, I mean, this we want him to remain healthy. You've met my son. He's a great kid.
Yes, he
swims,
is.
Gymnastics, skis. I mean, he is a risk taker. He, his mobility is his life. His athleticism is one of the greatest elements of characteristics of his life. So we're dealing with a lot of issues with, how we keep that for him. So, we were honest with him, and we were really honest with him at a very early age, at three, telling him why they were taking pictures of his brain. And when tumors started to develop, I was the one that told him what was happening in his head. I didn't leave that for the doctors. I could have left that for the doctors. But, again, I wanted him to know that my wife and I were going to be there for him. We were going to be right by his side, and that he could trust us and he could believe us.
I mean, and that's such an important thing. And definitely bringing up this topic this time, it must be very hard for you, Jarrett, and I, to bring us up now. And we definitely will have prayers for your son going under the surgery, and that he's recovered well, and that this is a success, and that you can continue to do this so he can live a happy, healthy life. So we'll offer prayers for him, definitely. And it's a tough question. Definitely a tough topic to come on the show to talk about. But again, our worldwide audience and all these people out there understand how powerful and strong a person you are to come on the show and talk about this. And I was not expecting, not knowing, because I did not know what's going on. But it kind of takes us all a step back from my venting at the beginning of the show to now to understand the importance of life and how important your children are compared to everything else that goes around you, and that we'll continue to pray for him and his recovery. So, again, thanks for calling the program, Jarrett. You got to give us a great update very, very soon after the surgery that everything's going well, so that you could be ready and we're all be excited about when the book comes out and he could read some of the pages and see that his daddy's an author. Okay. All right. Well, thanks again for calling.
Well, thank you, Neil.
All right. Take care, Jarrett. All right. That was Jarrett. You're listening to the Toll Education Show on the Toll Education Network. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Show on the Toll Education Network. Remember to go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Well, I am just so excited. And again, I'm up early in the morning to interview. I now have an international talk show, and I'm going to prove it right here by bringing the owner of UKHealthRadio.net, John Hicks, on the show. We are on that network, and I want to welcome the program, John Hicks. John, thanks for calling.
It's our pleasure. Good morning. And how are things in your part of the world?
Oh, it's cold. We're getting, the weather's starting to change. You know, it was warm, warm, hot, hot. But in the mornings, it's freezing. And I'm down in my basement where I have the window open because I'm allergic to my cats. So I'm a little chilly this morning. But I'm excited to talk to you because especially when you came up with this article, and I thought the best way to bring you on the radio show. So tell us about the how you're upset with British's education system. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, well, I contacted you. Well, first of all, thank you very much for sharing your show with our listeners. We've been going now 12 weeks, and week on week, we're making steady progress. The graph for listeners is increasing day by day, and virally, we're building a substantial community online on Twitter of health professionals from both sides of the both of the professional, the amateur, and the pharmaceutical and the homeopathic side. Each side of the fence are all represented on that community, which is really, really exciting. But the reason I contacted you was because of my own experience. I usually say it's a listener's letter or something, but on this occasion, it's my own experience where my daughter is 16 and she's left the school to attend college to study dramatic media and design. And she's quite a capable student, so she's mixing with people who are 2 years ahead of her, which is interesting. But the point is, she's got a full-time course, and so when she attended on the first day, she was given her timetable, and she's timetabled for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning. The other half of her class, another 20-odd students, they're timetabled for Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, and Friday. So, in fact, they only get tuition half of the week. Now, I think my kids tell me I'm getting to be a grumpy old man because I can remember when I went to college that full time meant full time. It was 5 days a week, and it was 9 till 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock.
Oh, wow! That's different, John. Sorry to interrupt. That's different, honestly. Our education system, our kids go different times, but so she's considered a full-time student. But in college, it's a little different. So continue with, so you went to school from 9 to 3:30 in college? That's really different.
Absolutely. We had 1 or 2 hours a week as free periods. You know, I mean, have things really changed where full-time education in the college system now is only half-time? You know, I feel they're short-changed. They've gone from my day when it was full-time meant full-time to now full-time being half-time. You know, the UK economy is a real mess. You know, the politicians and the bankers have just wrecked our economy. And, you know, on the streets, we're suffering and businesses are suffering. The businesses I talk to every day are suffering. And yet we're preparing to fight our way out of this economic mess by shortchanging our kids. I wouldn't mind so much if the politicians, and this is not a political statement because all politicians are the same. They're all saying, you know, we've all put more money into education, you know, education, 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 health, health, health. And actually, it's not happening on the ground. The schools are saying, we haven't got enough money. We haven't got enough money to staff the education system. The hospitals are saying, we haven't got enough money for drugs. You won't have heard my show, but last week I was complaining wildly because people are saying they can't get money for drugs because we're sending significant sums of money, huge sums of money, to places like India, China, and Russia, who don't actually need it. So, you know, I was having a bit of a grumble on air, and I thought, well, I'll speak to Neil and see what his take is. You know, does education have to be full-time? Can we rely on the kids to just go home for half of the week and rely on and trust them to actually do the work that's been set?
So it looks like that your country's decided to model the United States education college system, John. And that's when I saw that, and I want you to definitely share some of your comments. But that's very interesting. We always have gone to college. It's never been a full time thing. It depends. I mean, you would have classes in the morning, or you'd have classes in the afternoon. You might go Monday through Friday. But it seems like to me, she's getting the full course load of credits. It's just the way they're scheduling it. It's different. So, how many hours isn't so like the way our system works is it can be a 15 credits or 18 credits full time in the United States. And you might have class on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and you would have class for 3 to 4 hours those days, or let's say 3 hours each class. So you'd have 5 classes, 3 hours each. Okay. But you wouldn't be in school all day like our elementary and high school system in the United States. So it sounds like to me that Britain has decided they're not going to have college students sitting in a classroom the entire day. So you were getting, let's just say, 40 hours a week of school in the classroom when you were going to college?
Yeah, we got a full time. Full time was full time. There were lessons. I think there were about 2 free periods. So 2 or 3 hours a week were free for going to the library, doing research for projects or whatever, group work. But the rest of the time, it was in classroom. Now, that classroom might just be a tutorial where people worked in groups, but with a tutor. So they weren't unsupervised. They were working with the tutor.
So, but see, that's interesting. I guess what the United States has is the more freedom of the student. They go for 15, let's say, like I said, 18 credit hours. That means that you're going to be going to class maybe 2 days a week. It depends, 3 hour, if it, 2 classes for an hour and a half each or 3 hours. So each 3 credits is 3 hours a week of school. So they only go about 18 hours. They consider most of the hours studying the other time. So I guess that finally Britain has changed their system in the way. So is your daughter, how many hours a week of school is she getting in a full-time basis?
I'm just doing a quick back of a cigarette packet, not literally, but on a piece of paper, just doing those hours. But so she's doing, let me just do this, do my maths. She's got 12 contact hours a week, but the remainder of the time, she's not actually on site. She's off site. She's at home.
So she's basically taking a 12 credit course, like 4 classes for 3 hours each, and had a 40-hour week. So I guess that your education system has decided to make changes. Now, you're outraged by this, and you posted on different places, and you were able to reach out to me, and you see that the United States, some of these kids are only taking half courses, but if they're taking a full course load, most of it's expected outside the classroom. So out of that 40 hours, let's just say that they have 15 hours of credit hours, you have to double that amount of time that needs to be spent outside the school, of the classroom to study. So do you think, when did Britain make those changes? That's something we need to reach out to. And one thing I want to do now, John, is I want to bring more of an international setting to this network. And we're going to take this segment this time and put it out there. And now you can reach out to people in London that are in the education system saying, my good friend Neil would love to have a conference call with you and I to do something down the line, or book them, and you could book some people from Britain. But so when did this change? What was the response to people on your Twitter or whatever when you posed this question?
Well, it's a mixed reaction. The professionals are saying, the educationalists are saying, they need time to prepare lessons, they need time to mark, so they need space in the timetable for them to do the essentials that they have to do, so they don't continue to have to do it in their own time, which has been the traditional thing. And parents are saying, well, it sort of crept up on us, you know, gradually, this has all just been a creep. You know, it's gone from my day to today in steady evolutionary progress, and no one's really noticed. And it's only now that from my point of view, it's become really dramatic. I think I wouldn't have even noticed myself had she been continuing to do her 3 periods. If it was spread over a week, so she was going 5 days a week or going even 4 days a week and had those three periods on site on the college campus, I wouldn't have noticed. It's the reason I've noticed is that she's home for half the week. So she's only scheduled for 2 days and a half, and 2 days and a half she's expected to study at home. She's a teenager, and her friends are teenagers. they don't get up in the morning. I don't know if American young people.
No, they don't get up. They don't get up in the morning either, John. So it's we're seeing the Western world, and we're not much different at all. And when you said 16, she's in college. Our kids are pretty much going to college around 18 years old. So that's the difference in the United States for university work. I guess either she started early or specifically she was more gifted in a way that she finished school earlier to be in college at 16. Most of our kids are in 17 to 18 years old when they enter college. So,
in different local authority areas, that they have different structures. So you, in some areas, you will have schools that go right the way up to 18, and then they go on to university or to major colleges. But in other local authority areas, they split it slightly differently, so that they finish the school at 16, and then they go on to a college right the way up till they're 18, can go up to sort of 21 to 23 years of age before they either go to work or go to university. So it really depends on the individual, their aptitudes, and the local authority structure in your area. So it's what we call a postcode lottery as to how it's set up, because, you know, from one postcode to the next, it can change dramatically. Now, this is supposed to be preparing them for work. So, to be studying and to be directed to work for 1.5 days a week doesn't really prepare young people for work. It's a half a week. Then, as I say, my teenager, today is her first full day of studying at home, and she isn't up yet. So, you know, when I finish this call, it's 11:30 in the morning, I'm going to be chasing her and get her studying.
So it's kind of like you're really kind of getting on top of her, saying, hey, get out there. And you're dealing with the same stuff, John, and I hope you're listening to our United States feedback on my network and saying, oh, I'm glad we're hearing these days at tips days and news. I'm learning what is happening in the States. And I think that your listeners that are international are enjoying this as well to see our system in education. But John, when I heard this, I think now you get the understanding that they have decided that the professors in your country have decided we want to be like the tenured professors in the United States, where they really don't have to teach much. It's more about checking papers and reading and the kids learning on their own.
It's a completely different philosophy from what we're used to, of course.
Exactly. Hey, but why? We all have to model what the United States does, John. And I'm not saying anything, but we have to get people on from, and so you have to reach out in your area and Twitter and all that, and we got to get some more people from the UK that are in elementary, whatever your education system is, to discuss it, and we can kind of find out what's the problem with education in the UK, and we could count that as our first segment, and if there's a way you can conference them in and call me in the morning, we can do this segment monthly. Involving what's the problem with the UK's education system. So I appreciate you calling, John. Where can we find more information on you, learn about your radio station and what you're doing?
That's very kind of you. We're on ukhealthradio.net or ukhealthradio.com, whichever's easiest. And we have a regular blog. So if you press the B for blog at the bottom of the page, you can follow any of our articles. And I will certainly write this conversation up, and we'll be sharing it with our listeners and our website visitors. And we already follow you, of course, because we listen to your show every day. And we would invite people to contribute and to share their experiences. You know, we've been interested to hear what's happening on your side of the pond, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our experiences with you.
I never thought in it'll be 3 years that I would be calling, that someone would be calling from the UK, and that we're having a relationship internationally to this education show. But you and I will have to touch base, and that's what's so nice about Skype. We can do that, so I appreciate you calling.